We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I will be your host at the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. So this episode is of course brought to you by World Postal Day, celebrated each year on the 9th of October, the anniversary of the establishment of the Universal Postal Union in 1874. Union strong. Now, it was going to be October 1st, but then, you know, when they tried to deliver the union, nobody was home, and so they left a little note saying that they tried to unify you, but nobody was home, so to come to your local post office and pick up your unification within the next week, or else it'll be returned. This episode is also brought to you by World Mental Health Day, which actually comes the day after World Postal Day, and that is by no means an accident. They don't call shooting up your workplace going postal for no reason. This may seem like an old-fashioned cliche, and maybe things don't go this way anymore, but maybe, just maybe, we should change the phrase from going postal to attending school. However, you need to consider. On the morning of November 14th, 1991, recently fired letter carrier Thomas McLevain entered the post office facility in Royal Oak, Michigan. He walked into an area where management sat and shot his former bosses, which, if I'm honest, is an understandable act that we all have considered. Post-shooting interviews indicated that nobody at Royal Oak actually seemed to think that this was as unthinkable as other people thought. In fact, many of them had been waiting for something like this to happen. A postal worker told the news crew shortly after the shooting, "When I heard there was a shooter, in my mind, it could have been anyone. I understand why he did it." Now, nobody says that about school shootings, even though schools can be pretty horrible places. So maybe don't yell at your postal worker the next time your package comes a day or two late, or they leave a note on your house to unionize despite you being in the house at the time. Okay, guys, it is getting to the end of the year. The only festival that I've got locked and loaded for the remainder of this year is the Wynnum Fringe Festival up in Queensland, not too far from Brisbane. If you are familiar with the area, I'm sure you know where it is. I'll be taking my storytelling show, Wage Against the Machine, all about my old dodgy jobs, the $20,000 rubber debt that I got, and the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. So if you like this podcast, come and check it out. If you know someone who lives in the area, come send them to come and check me out. Otherwise, I'm organizing dates for 2024 for a tour, so I'll be checking out festivals all over the country, so keep an ear out for that. Until then, I will of course be the bearer of weird news. So let's start with the headlines. Tinder has introduced a new premium tier that carries a charge of $500 per month and has limited availability, with less than 1% of users eligible for their top tier level. The new system is actually a way to identify the 1%. When the revolution comes, we call it Tinder, the first against the wall. The intention of milking rich users aside is to assure that rich users only find other rich users. Similar ideas to be rolled out, of course, will be Tinder Bubble, where you never see anyone outside of your political slash spiritual slash conspiratorial bubble. Tinder Music slash movie slash book snob. And of course, Tinder Guilty Pleasure. They all fall under Tinder's new why bother trying anything different model. Scientists have developed a new method that converts seawater into drinking water that could be useful in disaster zones where there is limited electrical power. They will be rolling it out in most major American cities as a trial before rolling out worldwide. Because let's be honest, if it can save an American city, then we know for sure it could save anybody. The British Museum has launched a public hotline asking for help to locate 2,000 missing artifacts. The hotline was overwhelmed on opening day, with people calling to let them know the stolen items were inside the house. Like a historical pantomime, callers overwhelmingly called simply to say, "They're behind you." And museum employees walking in circles were going, "Where?" Word on the street, of course, is that members of the African, Egyptian, Indian, Aztec and Greek consulates are getting ready to call the museum and let them know where to find some stolen stuff. But they just need to finish putting together the list, because it's going to take a hot minute to finish putting that together. Game of Thrones author George R.R. Martin is suing ChatGPT's owner, OpenAI. Look, apparently he's concerned that the program will actually finish his book at any point. A guest on Fox News said, "Foreign-born Americans represent a real challenge to the survival of the Republic." And if I'm honest, he's right. See, there's this one guy, goes by the name Rupert. His son now owns a shitload of the news media, and together they cause a real maniac to be elected to the highest office in the country. It was really messy. I don't know if you heard about it. Physicists have shown that, like everything else, experiencing gravity, antimatter falls downwards when dropped, not upwards, as was apparently speculated. While the result is not a surprise, it was disappointing for millennial scientists who hoped that antimatter falling up despite all odds might lead to one day discovering some sort of anti-depression or anti-bank account that goes up despite all odds. $2 million of advertisements bankrolled by mining magnate Clive Palmer about the referendum campaign are warning voters that the voice will lead to financial costs for struggling Australian families. Which explains why Clive Palmer is spending so much money. He heard that there was an opportunity for struggling Australians to get fucked over, and he cried, "Not without my involvement there won't be." An Auckland father says he received a rude shock when he saw his KFC takeaway bag covered in drawings of penises. The father said his family would never eat at KFC again. I gotta say, if he thinks the bag is bad, wait until he finds out what's really in the secret herbs and spices. He's in for a shock. A herd of sheep looking for grass to graze on in a semi-flooded plain in Thessaly, Greece, broke into a greenhouse that cultivated medicinal cannabis, eating around 100 kilograms. And that was before they'd eaten the 100 kilos of weed. Man, they really went to town after that. The shepherd only realized his sheep had eaten a large part of the cannabis as the sheep started displaying strange behavior. Suddenly they were dreadlocking their fleece, they started a hacky sack league, baked some brownies, and just really sat and enjoyed some Attenborough documentaries while devouring all the grass snacks. That's the end of the headlines for this episode. We're going to go on to some of the biggest stories now, starting with defamation news. The ABC is being sued by the owner and former director of discount airfare booking website that, honestly, none of us have ever heard of, BestJet, and man who refused to turn off Google notifications for the CEO who stole Christmas, Robert McVicar Jr., over claims made by the business's former owner that were repeated by the ABC News website, which he claims are defamatory to his reputation. Now, I'm worried that this guy is going to kamikaze his public name by Ben Roberts smithing his reputation by making this a bigger thing than it needs to be by suing the ABC. See, the claims, which were printed as part of an article, are from the former CEO and gaslighting mean girl Rachel James, who alleged that McVicar's mismanagement of BestJet caused it to enter external administration and caused devastation to hundreds of employees. This is despite the report to creditors indicating that BestJet had gross losses for two prior financial years before McVicar's acquisition of BestJet and a deficiency in cash available to meet the client funds in the millions for three prior financial years before McVicar's acquisition of BestJet even happened. Every article that I have read makes it pretty clear that this is a mess created by Rachel and her husband Michael, who had previously sunk another entire airline. You know the old saying, sink a multi-million dollar airline once, shame on you. Sink a multi-million dollar airline twice, no, very much still shame on you. What are you doing? Get out of the airline industry. You know these CEOs and their group motto, can't somebody else pay for it? Classic. For context, BestJet shut down 6 weeks, or roughly one Liz Truss, after being bought by McVicar. Based on that, it might sound like McVicar was just terrible at business, but allegedly, this was sold under the false promise of it being a company that was still solvent, and not, as it would turn out, in fact, much less solvent than previously indicated. Maybe even so much as to be insolvent. Now, who is in the wrong here is not for me to comment on, more for the courts to decide. Is it a guy who was sold a company on the understanding that it was fine and then attempted to run said company, or the guys who had previously sunk an airline into $100 million of debt and were secretly letting a guy who was banned from running companies help run the company? It's not really for me to decide, is it? Feel free to draw your own conclusions on that one. When millionaires play their games, it's little folk who suffer, especially the travellers who booked flights through BestJet, spending thousands of dollars out of pocket and searching for answers. One customer, known by the name Cheryl Hendy, feared that she had lost $16,500 of business class trips to Paris for her family, which, if I'm honest with you guys, just sounds like she avoided the opening scene of Home Alone and should really be thanking McVicar for helping them from having to attempt airline-based shenanigans and comedic foibles in a post-9/11 world. It just wasn't going to work out for them. The airports are definitely not the place for feel-good Christmas movies about bringing families together like they used to be. But enough about the rich screwing over the rich. What about the ABC? What are they doing in response to this lawsuit? Well, they have attempted to dismiss the defamation case by making the most interesting of claims. See, they claim that the story can't have hurt his reputation because effectively nobody read it. It attracted virtually no readers at the time the business owner sent legal warnings to them. Apparently, during the nominated 3-day period in 2021, the story had been viewed by a staggering heights of just two people, guys. It was just two people. Enough to form a party, but not even enough to form a crowd, according to popular wisdom. Two. Guys, you hear me? Two. One using a device in Brisbane for 10 seconds, and one in Sydney for almost 2 minutes, bringing to mind that most philosophical of legal defenses. If a defamatory statement falls in a vast internet and nobody reads it, is it still a defamatory statement? Can one be defamed in 10 seconds? Or in 2 minutes? Is McVicar's reputation so low that it could be wrought $250,000 in damages for economic loss as a result of this news story? That again, two people accessed for a combined total of 2 minutes and 10 seconds. And let's be honest, one of them was definitely him, or else how would he have known that the article existed? I might not be able to comment on who fucked up BestJet, but I confidently argue this story has evolved into one about a man so fragile in ego that this incident that he is risking blowing up via the Barbra Streisand effect and suing the most trusted news outlet in all of Australia. Are you out of your mind, McVicar? We certainly wouldn't be talking about this if the ABC hadn't gone full second year philosophy degree with their defence strategy. Even this will do better numbers than that ABC article. We might even double it. Moving on now, it is climate future news. Guys, it's going to be a hot summer. A hot, hot summer again this year as climate change continues to cook the world like an 18-year slow cook. It even rotates so that the cook will be nice and even on both sides. But some kids have, quite selfishly, decided they don't want to be broiled alive like a thin slice of beef, and have come to the wild conclusion that this is somehow the fault of the government, which has led them to devote years to a climate fight with 32 different governments. So six young people from Portugal, aged between 11 and 24, went to the European Court of Human Rights to accuse 32 European governments of violating their human rights for what they say is a failure to adequately address climate change, which, frankly, is a bit of an insult. Do they have any idea how better things are than what they used to be? This isn't even the Industrial Revolution, guys. If it was, then they'd be working the mines, directly contributing to the very climate change themselves. But instances of black lung in children have decreased by a near 100%. This is the first climate change case filed with the European Court and could compel action to significantly slash emissions and build cleaner infrastructure in a lot of countries. The court rulings are legally binding on member countries, and failure to comply makes authorities liable for hefty fines decided by the court. Even more impressive, the mandated apologies will be legally required to be at least as sincere as Nicolas Cage screaming in fear from a helmet full of bees.
What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes! My eyes! Ah!
And will be legally exempt from including some of the more cliched phrases like thoughts and prayers, we wish we could have done more sooner, it was a different time, that was not our government, it was inconsistent with our values and our nation, it's un whatever country that you happen to be in at the time, I'm sorry you feel that way, slash this is what happened, and of course thoughts and prayers, which I know I've already said, but is the real MVP of the non-apology apology, and is rolled out when the absolute worst atrocities from unavoidable and abso-fucking-lutely avoidable, oh my god, how did they let this happen, what sort of neglect machine was left on autopilot to allow this horror to happen, things happen. The courts are increasingly seen by activists as a way of sidestepping politics and holding governments to account. They claim that they are spurred on by the pressing evidence all around them that the climate crisis is getting worse, which is a bold maneuver, given the failure of evidence-based documents known about for almost 100 years of investigation and presentation to governments, which got buried deeper than my happiness when I worked in customer service. Taking my home country of Australia as an example, we've been suffering some pretty obvious and extreme impacts of climate change, like another one in a lifetime slash one in 1,000 slash 500 slash 100 year natural disaster followed by record-breaking heats, or maybe a bushfire so large that it could be seen from space, maybe the continued destruction of one of the world's natural wonders. And then Pauline Hanson, a redhead, the kind of person most likely to be hurt by an increase of sunshine, going down to scuba dive in the wrong place to prove that nothing was actually happening. And the koalas might be extinct by 2050. Does that make us a serial killer of a country because we knew our actions would hurt animals and we went ahead and did it anyway? Maybe, I don't know. Who's to say? But it doesn't bother us because our new progressive-ish government went ahead and approved new coal mines anyway. Just completely normal business, as is usual. But we are talking about dead, fluffy animals. This is different. It's hot. Not fun summertime hot. The earth isn't getting a glow-up. It's Soylent Green hot. Yeah, see, you got so caught up in the eating of people that you forgot the entire background of that film is a world where the world has heated up so much that even a police enforcer wears this sort of fetching neckerchief as part of his intimidating uniform. We're talking desertification hot. Scientists say the climate of the Sahara is jumping across the Mediterranean Sea to southern European countries like Portugal, where average temperatures are climbing and rainfall is declining, Portugal's four driest years on record have all occurred since 2003. And I understand that Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa has made a name for himself as a celebrator of migration and is welcoming of people from all parts of the world. But you need to draw a line at inviting these foreign climates who come over here and take the job of honest, hard-working local climates. It's the same across Europe, and the legal arguments of these six Portuguese legends are backed by science. Remember, the Earth sweated through its hottest northern hemisphere summer ever measured with a record warm August, according to World Meteorological Organization. Again, a bold choice. See, the case against Australia saw the court consider evidence from Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the CSIRO, the Bureau of Meteorology, and the globally renowned ANU climate scientist Will Steffen. And while initially successful, it was overturned for many reasons, including who knows how or where members of the climate class will be living in 80 years, and the then technological and adaptive ingenuity of humanity to deal with the consequences flowing from any increases in temperature. It is not sustainable to say that all members of the climate class today may be at real risk of personal injury in 80 years in a manner that they cannot reasonably protect themselves against. That was the official ruling. You know, after all, they might get a spot in one of those end-of-the-world bunkers that the billionaires are building in New Zealand. Doesn't matter that the bunker wouldn't be needed if the duty of care had been implemented, they might still land on their feet. That's a pretty good internship to get. In separate and joint responses to the case, the governments argue that the claimants have not sufficiently established that they have suffered as a direct consequence of the climate change or the Portuguese wildfires. They claim that there is no evidence to show climate change poses an immediate risk to human life or health, and so argue that climate policy is beyond the scope of the European Court of Human Rights jurisdiction. So we just need a few of these kids to die and make a few notable sacrifices for the good of the rest of us. Time to bring back the black lung, it seems. Which of these kids is willing to go down into the mines to save the planet? Like a canary in the coal mine of the future, not exposing noxious gas, but rather noxious workplaces that shouldn't exist anymore, like coal mines. I do worry that Australia's ruling that a country has no duty of care to its children, that we went out of our way to overturn from a positive into a negative, will set a precedent destroying not only the future for these children, but also heaping an entire customer service career's worth of soul crush on these children at much too young an age. Won't somebody please think of the children? Not being in Europe might be their saving grace, as Australia is not held to account to the rulings of the European Court, so they may not look to the Australian courts for precedence. But if I'm honest with you guys, this is a mistake. As risky as the maneuver might be, it's got to be all or none. Any country who insists on badgering their way into the Eurovision Song Contest should be held to the consequences and standards of Europe. It's all or none, guys. You hear that, UK? All or none. You either join the EU or you get out of Eurovision. Moving on, it's ancient human news. Neanderthals have something of a negative reputation among human stereotypes. Much like the Irish or blondes, we unfairly paint them with the stupid brush because we need somebody to pick on. Our whole society is built on being slightly better than somebody else. Well, it's time to reconsider these preconceived notions or embrace our inner idiot. As it turns out, Homo sapiens carry DNA from not only Neanderthals, but other human-like species from our past. The Associated Press reports these ancient human cousins once lived alongside our early Homo sapien ancestors. They mingled and had children because human beings love to fuck. Though, can I ask, can reporters and scientists please stop calling them our cousins? Were these papers co-written by Rudy Giuliani and Charles Darwin, famous cousin marriers? I don't want to hear about our cousins getting it on and how it was actually helpful in securing our survival because they had developed antibodies from living in the area for so long. Was this study done in either the UK, the majority of Europe, Canada, South America, the Middle East, Northern Africa, New Zealand, or Australia? All places where you can legally marry your cousin? This joke was in fact brought to you by Incognito Mode. Don't ruin your search history with weird things that you are writing in a joke. Use Incognito Mode. As I mentioned earlier, Homo sapiens got a huge benefit from breeding with sub-Homo species, trading genes and becoming stronger, using the soft power of erections to tip the evolutionary balance in our favour. John Hawkes, a paleoanthropologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, said human evolution was not about survival of the fittest and extinction. It's about interaction and mixture. Interaction and mixture was the number one trending search on Pornhub this week, right after environment fucked by a large group of men. Seems it was not survival of the fittest after all, it was survival of the fuckest. Ooh. Homo sapiens are just the world's oldest fuckboys, and Pangaea was our F-boy island. In 2010, the Swedish geneticist Svante Paabo and his team were able to assemble fragments of ancient DNA into a full Neanderthal genome. Because of that work, we've discovered half of the Neanderthal genome is actually still around in small pieces scattered around modern humans. A feat that was long thought to be impossible and won Paabo a Nobel Prize last year. Man, they won a Nobel Prize for fucking. The Nobel Peace of Ass Prize. They got the Nobel Prize in phallus. Well, at least for proving that we as a species enjoy sex a lot. Something that Pornhub could have told us with a high degree of accuracy. Moving on now to Monopoly news. We're looking at Amazon again as they continue to fight for the title of cuntiest business practice, but they'll never quite get there as slavery is still a thing that existed in the past. And it is the emptiness of that inability to win that continues to drive Jeff Bezos to newer and more horrible heights of human cuntiness. So, what has he done this time? Amazon has been sued by US regulators in 17 states, alleging that its policies inflate online prices and stifle competition. The case is filed as US versus Human Decency and will appear in The Hague. Hang on, what? What do you mean, no? Well, I mean, The Hague prosecutes those accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity and genocide. Well, Amazon is definitely responsible for crimes against humanity. Well, I'm not even being hyperbolic here. Well, a crime against humanity is a deliberate act. Typically, as part of a systemic campaign that causes human suffering or death on a large scale, right? Well, when your company has a history of being so terrible that it not only forced workers to continue to work during a tornado, a delivery driver walked into an active police shooter situation because they were more scared of you than they were of a gun, or alternatively, they were, I guess, simply hoping that the police would release them from their eternal misery. Well, yeah. Fine. The lawsuit focuses primarily on Amazon's e-commerce business, with the FTC accusing it of using its size to create unfavorable conditions for third-party sellers. I'm not sure what tipped them off, if it was the litany of small businesses who've become endangered and then extinct, meeting as surprising an end as anyone who's taken an anti-Putin position in a Russian election, or Russian Daily Conversation, or if it was the rocket that they sent to space that was built out of reclaimed materials from former border stores, and had the words, "Try and stop me now, peasants," sprayed up and down the side in a rather gauche display, if you ask me. Or maybe it was the necklace of ears decorated with name badges from the CEOs of businesses that Amazon has undercut and effectively stolen the business from, strung around Jeff Bezos' neck. FTC Chair Lina M. Khan said in a statement, "Our complaint lays out how Amazon has used a set of punitive and corrective tactics to unlawfully maintain its monopolies." They brought up all the orange properties, then all the green ones, worked around into the brown properties, and even brought in the utilities, and nobody buys the utilities unless they absolutely have to. They even managed to buy the jail somehow, which is when people really started getting suspicious, you know? Amazon unsurprisingly said the FTC is wrong on the facts and the law, and had departed from its role of protecting consumers and competition. Amazon General Counsel and gargoyle brought to life attempting to blend in with humanity, David Zapolsky, said if the FTC gets its way, the result would be fewer products to choose from, higher prices, slower deliveries for consumers, and reduced options for small businesses. The opposite of what antitrust law is designed to do. Going on to say, it would directly result in fewer yachts and almost no smaller yachts for those yachts, and definitely no space trips for Jeff Bezos, who will have less power to make those employees of his piss into water bottles. We can't have that now, can we? Imagine slowing down deliveries to mere human levels. They'll never get the money together to do the R&D on lightweight spacesuits for their staff to wear as uniforms, to save on needing to take toilet breaks. Disgraceful. That's what it is. Disgraceful. They'll have to go back to pissing in water bottles like inhuman monsters instead of being able to piss in their fancy new spacesuits. Is this what you want, FTC? Is this what you want? Because that's where we're headed. He even excitedly tweeted, "The Wall Street Journal was on their side," tweeting this opinion article from the editorial board of the journal. Oh, well, if the Wall Street Journal is saying that they are wrong, maybe they aren't the bad guys after all. Let me just quickly have a look here. Who owns the Wall Street Journal again? Let me just look that up. That's right. It's News Corp. Oh, News Corp teaming up with Amazon. It's like the Avengers of horrible villains. Well, News Corp wouldn't have a vested interest in making a giant corporation who swallows up smaller entities and drives them out of business only to swallow up the market share and then increase their own power and influence look like anything but bad guys, would they? So clearly, this is an unbiased piece of regular news here. Sorry, piece of opinion here. News Corp does confuse the two, so it's very often happens. So I apologize. Amazon is accused of intentionally harming third-party sellers that sell their goods at a lower price than Amazon. The lawsuit alleges when Amazon discovers it's being undercut on price, it decides to move that seller further down on its own search results, making them effectively invisible, because we all know nobody goes past page one on any website. FTC head Lina Khan took aim at Amazon's policy for forcing sellers to use the tech giant's fulfillment centers, forcing the small and medium-sized businesses that use Amazon to reach customers to incur higher logistics costs while limiting their ability to sell their products elsewhere. But Amazon is undeterred by such accusations and have taken the battle to the FTC, taking aim at the FTC chair Lina Khan by first looking down the barrel of a camera link conversation with Khan as she threatens to leave them stranded on a dead business model, that of reckless growth and relentless crushing opposition, to which Bezos has replied, "Well, this is clearly why Bezos took Shatner into space. He needed a place where he could speak with the former spaceship captain and get advice on how to destroy a worthy adversary." Amazon had previously sought to have Khan recuse herself from any antitrust investigations into the company. In June 2021, they filed a 25-page petition to the FTC saying her previous criticism of Amazon made her appear to be biased. Well, to be fair, having more than one complaint against someone, anyone, is a clear indication of bias. That's why I was forced to make my siblings recuse themselves from the house that we lived in as a family. They displayed on multiple occasions a strong anti-Matt bias, speaking out against me and my desire to hit my siblings when I got bored and needed attention, or when I deemed that they had wronged me in some way, whether they knew it or not. A clear bias, and so now they are not allowed to come to any family meetings, events, or speak out against me in any way, lest they show their rampant and disgusting bias. Now let's not take into account if the complaints are valid or not. It's a simple matter of bias. You hear me? I mean, listen to this bias that Khan is presenting. She first rose to prominence in legal circles for publishing the article Amazon's Antitrust Paradox in the Yale Law Journal when she was a law student. Bias. They call it a groundbreaking article where Khan calls out for a new definition of antitrust laws that considers more than just the effect on consumer prices, reasoning that Amazon had escaped antitrust scrutiny because the laws were outdated. Do you think that sounds reasonable, dear listener? Because you're wrong. You're so wrong. That article is oozing with well-reasoned and articulately stated bias. Are we going to blindly trust federal complaints allowing other actions the FTC has taken against Amazon in the past few months, suing the company, alleging that it was using deceptive practices to enroll consumers into Amazon Prime and making it challenging for them to cancel their subscriptions? Are we just going to blindly accept that? Just because this former writing prize and award-winning journalist who has spent most of her career studying antitrust laws, markets, and wrote an absolute groundbreaking article on the topic says so? Is that the world that we're going to live in now? No. Same way that we wouldn't let someone who has spoken up about the injustices of serial killing be on a jury to convict a possible serial killer. They'd clearly be biased against our potential serial killer. Best we just fill the jury with other serial killers and serial killer sympathizers. Maybe some killer clowns, maybe a prisoner or two, maybe someone who loves to swing an axe at a head. And if those people convict your serial killer, then clearly they have done something wrong. We need to fight fire with fire. The chair of the FTC needs to be replaced with, I don't know, Milburn Pennybags. Yes, the original Monopoly man himself. Now there is a man who understands the needs of a businessman and can lay down a fair and unbiased opinion before running up the rent on your businesses and then forcing you into debt so that you'll sell your properties to him at a lowered rate, and then he will own all of the Monopoly board and then the Snakes and Ladder board and eventually the Game of Life, Pop-O-Matic Trouble and Operation, where if you want to have a bucket of water removed from your knee, you'll need to pay a hefty fine of Monopoly dollars first. Seems only fair. And to end today's episode, we've got soft power news. Soft power. It's how you win a war that isn't a war. A culture war, if you will. Have you gone to a McDonald's down the street? Have you eaten some Chinese food? Have you furiously masturbated to your favourite hentai character? These are all forms of soft power. Well, except for that last one, that's sort of like a semi-erect power. It's a way of having a presence and influence over the way another country thinks. It's the exportation and commodification of pop culture. It's the reason that we still tolerate America, because they make all of our favourite TV shows, movies, and fast food restaurants. Probably the least known version of soft power is the softest of them all, pandas. So here's something that you might have known. China owns all the pandas, even ones born abroad. They are considered to be the property of China, as part of a loan program that it has with selected zoos around the world. The pandas are rented to zoos throughout the world for sometimes as much as $1 million per year. China doesn't just own your apartment building, they also own all the pandas. That's right. In a maneuver called panda diplomacy, which began in 1972 when Richard Nixon traveled to the People's Republic of China to begin normalizing relations with the country. So every time you see a panda at the zoo, you can thank Richard Nixon for that. That and the fun through line in Futurama, but nothing else. You hear me? Nothing else. In an attempt to get us to like them and forget about the whole Uyghur labor camps by offering us big fluffy pretend bears to distract us. So what's going on with our fluffy friends? Well, the United States National Zoo has announced its three giant pandas, Tian Tian, Mei Jing, and Zhao Guizhi, will head back to China in early December after attempts to renew the three-year contract failed. That's right, the world. China is that landlord, and you are renting hope from them. Fluffy, fluffy hope. And they are kicking you out. I honestly think that this should be a strategy that Australia adopts. All the kangaroos, all the koalas, the Tasmanian devils, the emus. If it started out here, we are renting it to you from now on. Oh, except for expats. You can have those for free. Even we don't want those. If it's fluffy and Australian, we should rent it out and use that money to help rebuild the damage done by climate change on native habitats. I just think that's the fairest way we could possibly do that. Koalas alone would get us a pretty penny. We have koalas in 7 European, 9 US, 2 Japanese, and 1 African zoo. That's money in the bank, my friends. Plus, we'd have control over like how they name the koalas the same way that they have control over the way that the pandas are named. You know, strong, culturally appropriate names that reflect our values and things that we love, like Robbo or Shazza or Ned Kelly or Tall Poppy Syndrome or New Coal Mine Approval. We can sell them a subscription package and charge them extra for eucalyptus leaves. We'll sign up countries to Koala Plus because, honestly, they only eat eucalyptus leaves. And if you kill our koala, we will charge you for it. Honestly, the way that we are approving mines, we're going to need some more soft power. Because the way we're burning up coal, people are going to forget how good we are at sport. And we only have so many hens' births that people actually want. The Memphis Zoo has already returned Yaya, the panda that has spent the last 20 years in Tennessee. And the San Diego Zoo's pandas have been sent home, making room for the red pandas to occupy the space. See, this is what happens when you open up the housing market. Suddenly, you can get a whole bunch of new occupants in an area they would never have otherwise been able to live in. And that space would be much bigger than anything that they've ever have lived in before. It sounds like this is turning into a pretty good thing for the old red panda. The Atlanta Zoo's 4 pandas are expected to return to China sometime in 2024, as will Adelaide Zoo's pandas, Wang Wang and Fu Ni, if an existing agreement is not extended, which it doesn't seem like it will be. Director of Adelaide Zoo, Dr. Phil Ainsley, said the decision is based on the zoo's agreement with China, saying it's best not to attempt a breeding year, just in case we end up with our giant pandas going back to China at some point next year. Our panda privileges are being revoked. The cost of living situation is so out of control that even these pandas are living in housing insecurity. The worst part is, as if it isn't hard enough that these pandas have insecure housing situations, this year might result in them being deported. No, imported? That's not quite right either. Re-imported. Rescinded. Revoked. But it doesn't matter. But because their housing situation is so precarious, they don't even get to have sex this year. That's awful. What a terrible situation. The recall of pandas comes as relations between US and China become increasingly frayed. Gee, I wonder what could have caused that. Do we have a clip?
Why do you keep calling this the Chinese virus? There are reports of dozens of incidents of bias against Chinese Americans in this country. Your own aide, Secretary Azar, says he does not use this term. He says ethnicity does not cause the virus. Why do you keep using this?
A lot of people comes say from it's China. Racist. It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China.
Tensions started to heighten during the Trump administration when sanctions were added to many Chinese-made products, but relations have increasingly deteriorated. Washington has attempted to deprive China of cutting-edge computer chips, citing national security concerns. That's increasing talks of a decoupling of the two nations, which could have severe economic impacts for both countries and the world. US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned in April that a full separation of the economies would be disastrous for both countries. And they aren't wrong. If we aren't outsourcing cheap labor to countries like China, imagine how high the cost of things like the iPhone will become. They already charge $1,500 for a single phone. And if they have to move their operations to other countries like Bangladesh, it's gonna skyrocket. It costs a lot to build the kind of infrastructure needed in order to catch suicidal below minimum wage employees before they hit the ground so that they don't die or have to take a few days off to heal after breaking one of their bones, one of their spirits, or their hope and their ability to outpace the black dog as it pursues them through the long darkness of the human condition. And without Uyghur forced labor camps building American phones, how will China take care of its unwanted Muslim minority communities? Whatever will they do? These two countries need each other. Yeah, that's right, China. We still haven't forgotten about that. Sure, we haven't acted on it, and we never will because we desperately want you and your cheap labor, but we haven't forgotten. China is also rescinding pandas from zoos in Scotland, Japan, the Netherlands. It's pandemonium. It's a worldwide panda recall. After discovering that some of their diplomatic ties are faulty, it's a full factory recall. All pandas must return. I don't know where China is going to put all of these newly acquired pandas. They don't have facilities just waiting around for pandas. Pandas need a lot of space, and that's a lot of pandas. Plus, the cost of feeding them. And I'm not one to shit on a dastardly plan, but I don't think that they've thought this one through. China will learn that it isn't going to help them as much as they think. They'll just be down a few million dollars a year per panda. Pandas are hard work. Sure, they are damn cute, but they refuse to fuck. Look, I get it. Pandas. The world's a tough place, and it is mostly our fault. We don't deserve more pandas. We barely looked after the ones that we had. We made them all nihilists. They went from meat eaters to vegans and then lost the will to live for some reason. Or even worse, became antinatalist. Such a pretentious stance, if you ask me, but that's just between us. Banging on about how, with the world the way it is, why even bother having babies, that it's morally irresponsible to have them. They made their choice, and we need to respect what they've become. But the big question is, will we still get Chinese food? Hey, is that still on the cards? Will we still have red pandas, which frankly, are better. There, I said it, alright? Red pandas, better. I still get to eat pork buns, and I still have red pandas. You know what? Take the pandas, China. We don't need them. They're yours. It's just to save us a lot of hassle. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks so much for hanging around. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, as always, please share it around. Get anyone you know who might enjoy this sort of thing to give it a listen. If you're a reviews type person, make sure you go onto whatever platform it is that you listen to this on and give it a like or a rating. So it's 5 stars if you liked it. 1 star if you didn't. That's it. That's the only reviews that I will accept. Otherwise, come out and see the live shows if you want to support the podcast. And if you want to hear more of these episodes, the only way we're going to be able to do that is if I have money to live. And so I'll be able to do that a lot easier if I'm able to continue the live shows. I will, of course, be at the Wynnum Fringe with Wage Against the Machine and touring around 2024 with Wage Against the Machine again. So if you've seen it and you think you know someone who will enjoy it, send it my way. But until then, thanks a lot and goodbye.